good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in to tonight's program. Glad you could make it. Stick around because we have some stuff tonight you're probably going to wish you hadn't heard. But I want to start tonight with this story of James O'Keefe, one of the boys that Fox News just loved to treat as a hero. You remember James O'Keefe? He's infamous for dressing up as a pimp and videotaping Acorn people offering to help the supposed pimp and his prostitutes secure funding for a brothel. Now, you can make the argument that the Acorn staffers knew they were being punked and just stood there and played along just to watch this guy go nuts. Well, Fox News constantly replayed coverage from that operation in September, according to, I think it's Think Progress. In September, Fox News Sunday host Chris Wallace named O'Keefe his Power Player of the Week. Chris Wallace called this thug an undercover reporter and a fascinating character. Well, you probably know by now, yesterday the FBI arrested him, O'Keefe, and three others. They're charged with entering federal property under false pretenses with the intent to commit a felony. The charge itself is a felony. The FBI says they were plotting to wiretap Senator Mary Landrieu's office in New Orleans. She, of course, is the conservative Democrat from Louisiana. One of the other men busted in this, Robert Flanagan, is the son of William Flanagan, the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Louisiana. You think he's a Republican? Two of the men involved in this operation, quote, dressed as telephone company employees, end quote, and showed up at Mary Landrieu's New Orleans office saying they had to fix phone problems. The thug, James O'Keefe, was already there and was, quote, positioning his cell phone in his hand to videotape the operation, end quote. After being asked, the staffer gave Basil, one of the... it's hard to keep these thugs apart. Basil is one of the bad guys, I guess. Yeah. The staffer gave Basil access to the main phone at the reception desk. The staffer told investigators that Basil manipulated the handset. The three thugs then told the staffer they needed to perform repair work on the main phone system and asked where the telephone closet was located. It goes on and on. Now, they've been released on $10,000 bond. I hope these thugs go to prison. This is a felony. Homeland Security, as much of a bloated, useless agency as it is, should take a look at this as an act of terror against a sitting United States senator, one whose points of view I don't particularly care for, but that's beside the point. She's a senator. If this were Orrin Hatch, I would feel the same way. What is interesting to me is the way Fox News reported this during Shepard Smith's little late afternoon newscast. Now, remember, Shep Smith is the one who a couple of months ago was saying, gee, maybe he shouldn't be on Fox News, because his point of view on a particular story, which I forget what it was something that was logical. There's no such thing as logic on Fox News. But I want you to hear this. Tim Gaughan, I guess, G-A-U-G-H-N, is the reporter, and he's the one that starts out, and then Shepard Smith cuts in. I want you to hear what they say. Listen to this.
All right, some weirdness in New Orleans, too. Tim Gaughan, what is this?
This is a weird one, Shep, and I apologize for reading over my shoulder because we're just getting information. I want to make sure I know what we have confirmed and what we don't.
But that's a weird press release.
Yeah, we have the press release. I'm going to read from a local report. It's the Acorn Gotcha Man. The FBI is alleging that a plot to wiretap Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu's office in downtown New Orleans has arrested four people.
Plot to wiretap her?
Yeah, that's apparently what happened. It apparently happened yesterday, but now it's being released. One of the suspects includes this James O'Keefe. You've probably heard of him. A lot of people in the news have heard of him. Our viewers have heard of him. James O'Keefe is a conservative filmmaker whose undercover videos at Acorn field offices severely damaged the advocacy group's credibility. Now, the FBI alleges that O'Keefe aided and abetted two others. Wow. These two other guys dressed up as employees of the telephone company. They attempted to interfere with the office's telephone system. There's a fourth person who's accused of aiding and abetting these two others. All four are charged with entering federal property under false pretenses with the intent of committing a felony. A witness from Landrieu's office says O'Keefe is present in the office and claimed to be waiting for someone to arrive. Very weird story that probably needs a lot of context and a lot of looking into, which is what we're going to do here. But I just wanted to get on the record with it right now.
So they're saying basically they're in there. It sounds as if what they're saying is they're looking for some acorn hanky-panky, and they try to tap into Mary Landrieu's telephone to get it.
That could be one way of looking at it, yes.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I guess we'll find out soon enough.
We will.
Yeah, you will, Shep. Can you believe that? Shepard Smith. Now, there's nothing in the story whatsoever in the FBI report, in the arrest record, and in this reporter, Tim Gaughan's report, nothing about acorns. Somebody probably took Shepard Smith to the woodshed about a month or 6 weeks ago whenever he started sounding logical and rational like some newscasters used to sound. They probably took him to the woodshed over at Fox News and said, look, man, cut the crap. You know, you know what you're paid to do. You're paid to lie, cheat, steal, and mislead people. Come on, Shep, stop it. So that's why he came up with this today. He says, it sounds as if what they're saying, who, Shep? They're looking for some acorn hanky-panky. Nobody said anything about acorn. Nowhere in the story. But Shep obviously had his pants taken down, and the bosses gave him a case of red ass. And this is the way he responds. He says, "Well, now they're looking for some acorn." And even the reporter, you heard the long pause from Fox News reporter Tim Gaughan after Shepard Smith says that. Gaughan says, "That could be one way of looking at it. Yes, you know." And you can hear even the reporter. You can hear that he's trying to figure out what Shepard Smith just said and how he hangs it on acorn. You want to hear it again? Cue it up. I want to play it again because I want to make sure that people get this. The first voice is Shepard Smith. Listen up.
All right, some weirdness in New Orleans, too. Tim Gaughan, what is this?
This is a weird one, Shep, and I apologize for reading over my shoulder because we're just getting information as I want to make sure I know what we have confirmed and what we don't.
But that's a weird press release.
Yeah, we have the press release. I'm going to read from a local report. It's the acorn gotcha man. The FBI is alleging that a plot to wiretap Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu's office in downtown New Orleans has arrested four people.
Plot to wiretap her?
Yeah, that's apparently what happened. It apparently happened yesterday, but now it's being released. One of the suspects includes this James O'Keefe. You've probably heard of him. A lot of people in the news have heard of him. Our viewers have heard of him. James O'Keefe is a conservative filmmaker whose undercover videos at Acorn field offices severely damaged the advocacy group's credibility. Now, the FBI alleges that O'Keefe aided and abetted two others. These two other guys dressed up as employees of the telephone company. They attempted to interfere with the office's telephone system. There's a fourth person who's accused of aiding and abetting these two others. All four are charged with entering federal property under false pretenses with the intent of committing a felony. A witness from Landrieu's office says O'Keefe was present in the office and claimed to be waiting for someone to arrive. Very weird story that probably needs a lot of context and a lot of looking into, which is what we're going to do here. But I just wanted to get on the record with it right now.
So they're saying basically they're in there. It sounds as if what they're saying is they're looking for some acorn hanky-panky and they try to tap into Mary Landrieu's telephone to get it.
Okay, all right.
That
could be one way of looking at it, Shepard Smith, if you're a complete moron. If you are a typical Fox News employee, yeah, that could be one way of looking at it, Shep. And what do they refer to this punk, this James O'Keefe? They call him a conservative filmmaker? Since when is handling a cell phone camera? When does that make you a filmmaker? Oh my God. Oh well. This is what we have in store for us, folks, with the new Supreme Court rulings and a Republican Party that is spinning into absolute drugged madness, and a Democratic Party, which we're going to get to coming back after the break, that just doesn't seem to care.
Yeah. people with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. I forgot. I want to welcome another new affiliate in Spokane, Washington, AM 930 KBAI, who joins us, I believe, tonight, live from 6 to 9 in Spokane, Washington. Thanks to the management team who decided to put this program on. We do appreciate it very much. And to the residents of Spokane, if you've not heard this program before, just make sure your seatbelt's fastened, okay? I'm trying to dial it back just a little bit. I cuss a lot, and it's been requested that I kind of clean up my language a little bit. Not requested by the government, but requested by a couple of people who I really respect in the radio business. So, Spokaners, is that Spokaneites? I'm not sure which it is. You get the Spokaneites. You get the PG-13 version of the Malloy program, as does everybody else. The R version we've decided to get rid of for a while, or just put on hold for a while. Now, to all the people who love to hear me curse and scream and rant and rave, it'll still be there. It's just that I'm just trying not to use, you know, all those cuss words. So thanks to AM 930. Now, I know it's going to have somebody say, oh, well, they warned him. No, nobody warned me about anything. Good Lord. It's just that I started listening to some podcasts of the program, and I thought, that's a little rough, Malloy. So to AM 930 KBAI in Spokane, welcome to the Malloy Zone. And again, you know, send us an email if you like. Let us know what you think of the program, even if you hate it. I don't know. Are there a lot of conservatoids out there in Spokane? I have no idea. I have not been to your city yet. I've been all around Spokane, but never to Spokane itself. Moving right along. Tomorrow night on this program, like a lot of radio and television, we will be carrying Obama's speech, first State of the Union speech, live. We don't come on until 9:06, as you know. I don't know how far into the speech he'll be. Maybe not too far, given all the hoopla when the President of the United States enters to address a joint session of Congress. But we will cover it live tomorrow. One of the things, as we all know now, one of the items, one of the very special items that he is going to be talking about tomorrow night is a freeze on spending, a three-year freeze on spending where it concerns domestic programs. And as far as increases in that spending after that, no greater than whatever inflation is after that. If inflation is 0.5%, well, that's what he'll propose in his annual budget the following year. A spending freeze. Now, Rahm Emanuel, the thug who put this together, apparently thinks that this will send a signal to Republicans and to conservative Democrats about his seriousness about cutting the budget deficit. That's what administration officials said Monday to the reporter for the New York Times. When they say administration officials, it's usually singular. It may mean Gibbs, the press secretary, but it also means Rahm Emanuel. Nobody else speaks from the Oval Office except Rahm Emanuel. But the Times persists in using the plural. The officials said the proposal is going to be a major component, both of Mr. Obama's State of the Union address tomorrow night and on the budget he'll send to Congress on Monday for the fiscal year that begins this coming October. Now, what will be frozen? Well, it's going to cover a lot of agencies and programs for which Congress allocates specific budgets every year, including air traffic control. Huh? Who's that sound like? Yeah, sound like Reagan? Yeah, there you go. Air traffic control. Are you a frequent flyer? I got hung up in Minneapolis this past Sunday. Couldn't get out of there until Monday because of the horrific weather that was here in Georgia. And then when I got here, the weather moved in to Minnesota. Now, what does that have to do with air traffic controllers? Well, come on. Are you kidding me? Air traffic controllers, every time you get on a plane, you don't have to worry about the pilot. You don't have to worry about the airworthiness, I guess, of the aircraft. You don't have to worry about any of that. What you have to worry about is whether or not the people guiding all of these aircraft are properly trained, are not overworked, haven't worked more than one 15-hour shift in the past 48 hours. You know what I'm talking about. It's the ATCs, air traffic controllers, who handle this traffic throughout the country. So what does Obama want to do? Cut the budget to them. And there's more. Stick around. This is like, say hi to the new boss, same as the old boss. This is Reagan, only without the, without the funny hair. We'll be right back. The brilliance of an angel.
Crossed at the River Levee.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 25 before the hour. Okay, how to gain an affiliate and lose him in about 5 minutes. AM 930 KBAI is in Bellingham, Washington, not Spokane. My mistake. I believe Spokane is joining us later this week. Is that it? Not sure. Hope so, my producer says. But anyway, thanks to the people who corrected me. It is Bellingham, Washington, AM 930, KBAI. So thanks to you. Thanks to you folks for taking the program. All right. The freeze that Obama is going to propose tomorrow is nonsense. Estimates are it'll save $250 billion over 10 years. That's $25 billion a year. That's less than 3% of the roughly $9 trillion in additional deficits the government is expected to accumulate over that time. Remember when Clinton, as much as I didn't like Clinton, but remember when he handed it off to the Bush crime family? And as far as you could see, I think the number was $9 trillion in surpluses over the next 10, 15 years, whatever it was. Remember that? The good old days? Seems like a million years ago, wasn't it? Well, it actually was. It was in the year 2000, which was a million years ago. That was the first blow that let us know that democracy in this country, representative government, I should say, was dead on December 12th, 2000. And the final blow came last week when the U.S. Supreme Court, once again, with the same kind of political alignment, decided that corporations are really people. Even though corporations don't go poo-poo, and they don't take showers, and they don't brush their teeth, and they don't pay the same tax rate as you and I do, and they live in little envelopes tucked away in lawyers' offices, as opposed to living in houses like you and I do, but they are still people! Oh, I'm sorry. Now, what is going to be cut in addition to, air traffic control? Farm subsidies, which is probably a good idea, although I don't think there are very many factory farms who want that. The farm subsidies, of course, used to try to protect the family farmer whose income depended on not supply and demand, but whose income depended on the manipulations put together by the commodities market, the traders who would stand on the commodities floor in Chicago and bid on future contracts for corn, wheat, soybeans, whatever. And as a result, the farmers were not allowed to just go about their business. Everything in this country that has anything, just the stench of money, the slightest taste of money, becomes something for these bastards to gamble with. It becomes just another medium of rolling the dice. And if people get hurt, people get hurt. Too bad. How many farmers were put out of business? Remember back during, what was it, the 80s? What's his name? The country, the guy that had the farm aid concerts, Willie Nelson. Oh my God, I'm losing my mind. Remember all of those concerts, farmers that were being kicked off the land? Why was that? Why were they being kicked off their own property? Why were they losing out to the banks? Don't you remember that? Because big, agribusiness in this country decided they wanted the competition removed. And they got it. And part of the reason they got it was the speculation of the commodities market that drove farmers out of business. So now Barack Obama is saying, well, let's cut farm subsidies. Who do farm subsidies benefit right now? The family farm? What family farm? Who gets the big benefit? Who gets the money? Yeah, you're right. He also wants to cut spending for education. Education. Oh, my God. The citizens of this country are some of the most ignorant on earth when it comes to their own history, when it comes to science, when it comes to physics, when it comes to medicine. I'm not talking about academia. Sure, people from all over the world still come here to get their education. But the average American, come on, folks. Come on, you know what I'm talking about, right? So cut education, cut nutrition. Yeah, that makes sense. A hungry child is an alert child, right? Cut nutrition even further. What did we talk about last night? This freak over here, the lieutenant governor of South Carolina, this Republican who wants to be governor of South Carolina, compared children on nutritional programs in the public school system in South Carolina to animals, and you shouldn't feed them, because if you feed stray animals, they just breed. 58% of the public school students in South Carolina are on some sort of subsidized meal program in the school system there. 58%. This freak says, well, we should get him off that. Well, it looks like Obama is aligning himself with the Republicans. It doesn't look like he is. What a letdown. What a letdown. Talk about betrayal. Oh yeah, national parks. Let's cut whatever money is spent on national parks. Nobody can afford to take vacations anymore anyway, so what the hell? They're just sitting there, right? Let's get rid of the park rangers. Let's get rid of the people who run the concession stands. Let's get rid of the guides. Let's get rid of the nature programs. Let's get rid of all of it. Just shut it down. To hell with it. Now, what will be spared? You know what will be spared. Military spending. What was it, this last military budget, the one that was visible? $750 billion. Because who are we at war with? We have an occupational army in Iraq. We have 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. Is it 100,000? I don't know. 50,000 in Afghanistan fighting people who live in mud huts and caves and make things out of old spark plugs and wire and shrapnel to blow our people up. And why are we in Afghanistan? Oh, let's not go there again, Malloy. Come on. So no cuts to the military. God forbid that the military-industrial complex would have to bite any bullets. They make the bullets. Why should they have to buy them? I bet Eisenhower is just spinning wherever he is, spinning in his grave, huh? Homeland security, no cuts. Foreign aid, no cuts. Of course, foreign aid is nothing. What is it? $7, 8, 10, $15 billion a year? Who are the biggest foreign aid recipients? Come on, quick, 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 quick. Egypt, Israel, Colombia. Unless it's changed. Egypt, it used to be just Egypt and Israel. And then Colombia. You know, so we can stop the drugs, I guess. I don't know. So foreign aid, that will remain intact. War spending, that will remain intact. Homeland security. Homeland security. Now, there's an effective bureaucracy, huh? Isn't that, aren't they great? Every time you go through an airport. Homeland security would like to remind you that the alert level in the United States or at this airport or someplace is orange. When you go in to take a leak before you get on the airplane, please notice whether or not there is an Arab in the stall next to you and then notify somebody quickly. Homeland security. Oh, my God. Plus, the entitlement programs that make up the biggest and fastest growing part of the federal budget, that would be Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Untouchable. Not that I think they should be touched. But Homeland Security, the biggest bureaucracy, I think, in the history of the United States from the get-go, put together by Republicans. Put together by so-called conservatives. So, there you have it. Now, the part that gets me about this, speculation already is rampant that the liberals in the Democratic Party are going to be furious. The liberals in the Democratic Party, what about just all Democrats? Oh, wait a minute. That's right. We have people like Mary Landrieu. We have people like Ben Nelson. We have a whole cadre of people who present themselves as Democrats or liberals, and they're not. Ed Schultz. I mean, I could go right down the list, right? So here we are. Conservative Democrats, that means Republicans in disguise, in the House and Senate, have urged Obama to support this freeze. And this is cosmetic. It's supposed to let, voters, Wall Street, and other nations that the president is willing to make tough decisions at a time when the deficit and the national debt have reached levels that undermine the country's long-term security, or prosperity is the way the New York Times puts it. The nation's long-term prosperity? Why? The framers didn't even want a standing army. Why are we spending $750 billion to make more weapons? All we need, right? We need 15 well-hidden intercontinental ballistic missiles with multiple nuclear warheads on the top, right? That's all we need. Who's going to mess with that? Huh? Oh, my God. From Texas City up to Ames, Iowa. For 7 long years, we've been fighting for a change. Looking for a country that don't.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. So, Obama's speech tomorrow night is crafted by, I realize he writes most of his own speeches, a very smart man. But it will be crafted by, and Rahm Emanuel's hands will be all over it, his fingerprints. It's incredible. We are in an election year. This is the kind of disrespect that the Democratic Party has for its liberal base, its rational base. You know, the Republican Party is chock-a-block with dog-eating morons. Their leadership consists of people like Sarah Palin, the suicider Glenn Beck, the drug-addicted Rush Limbaugh, the loofah-loving Bill O'Reilly. I mean, it would be funny, except these are the people that hold a certain percentage, maybe 5 or 6% of the American public in thrall. So in order to satisfy that small group of right-wingers, Barack Obama is doing this? What about the 95% of us that are normal? What about the huge percentage of us who have come to the conclusion that you don't reform health insurance, the way health insurance is handled in this country, by doing what Obama allowed to have happen in the House and the Senate? Payoffs, lies, deceit, cheating. And ultimately, you have something, bottom line, that benefits the very insurance industry that has been screwing the American public now for, what, 30 years? And most of us are out here saying, look, Mr. President, when are you going to address the issue that we all are really concerned about? And that is the economy. It's tanking. Hello, Mr. Obama. It's tanking. Republicans don't care. They want it to go down. The wealthy multimillionaire spokes geeks for the Republican Party who infest talk radio and television want it to be destroyed. But Mr. Obama, we had a different take on you. It's our fault. We thought you were, even though you told us you weren't, we thought you were liberal. We thought you were progressive. Hell, you're not even a Democrat, and you know it. You are another president that represents, first, corporate America. Second, Wall Street. Or is that the same thing? Third, no, the Wall Street is not corporate America. They don't make anything in Wall Street. They just churn. They churn like when you flush a stopped up toilet after the plumber's been there. They just churn the financial markets and create things out of air that mean nothing. But it sucks resources out of the society. So your first priority, Mr. Obama, seems to be that industry and corporate America, the military-industrial complex. Somewhere down the list are people like me. My fault. Fool me once, shame on me. Or as George Bush said, fool me twice. Let's listen to the Who. You know, we're just going through the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross 5 steps of grieving. The first step with Obama was denial. No, this is not happening. Then anger. I think that's where I'm kind of hung up. And then you try bargaining. Come on, Mr. President. Can't we make a deal here? And then what's next? Depression? And then acceptance. I think I've skipped a couple. I've already accepted the fact, and if you're a regular listener to the program, you know that. I've accepted the fact. Barack Obama, as much as we thought he was about change, was not. He was about maintaining the status quo. The Republicans want to destroy the status quo. So I guess in light of that, you could say that Barack Obama was trying his best to save the country by maintaining the status quo, because he's up against a tidal wave of idiots in the Republican Party. But, Mr. President, we bought the story. We really did. Some of us did. I know a lot of people, the real leftists in this country, who tried to warn the rest of us, don't do it. Barack Obama's not what you think he is. Don't do it. Don't do it. Support Kucinich. Support Wesley Clark. Support, not this guy. Don't do it. And what do we say? Oh, man, no, look, history's being made. Wow. No, I'm going to support Barack Obama. Yeah, go. Where? Nowhere. Listen to the speech tomorrow night. We'll be here. We'll be covering it. I will try to be quiet while the speech is on. What a disappointment. Oh, and as an aside, apparently Hannity, this little parrot for the Republican Party, who's never had an original idea in his life, what was he talking about today? Somebody sent me an email, said he was talking about Obama bowing to the Japanese premier. What was that, 8-10 months ago? But apparently Hannity played some clip from one of my programs where I'm busting up on Republicans, and he played it as an example of liberal hate speech. And the guy who had let me know about this said, so look for a tidal wave of his geekoid listeners to send you the emails again. So far, I've gotten one. What is it? How have I become the favorite whipping boy of the conservatives? First it was Hannity, then it was Beck, and then it was O'Reilly, and then it was Ed Schultz, and now I'm back to Hannity. Oh my God! I mean, how much longer is it? Are we going to work our way through the crowd of conservatives again? It's all right with me. I mean, I'm serious. When those four talk about me, it builds the audience. I love it. Just keep it going, boys. But I can't figure out what it was that I said that rattled their cages. I don't say things on this program that are not true. I'm not a conservative. Everything I say is true and can be backed up. But it's great fun rattling all these conservative cages. I love it. Sing along with the Moody Blues, I lose 26 listeners. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. We are kind of top-heavy with stuff tonight. We have a moment with Bob. Yeah, he's writing again. Oh, my God. After promising us last October that it was finished, right? But we have a moment with Bob we want to share with you. Also, Kay Petrini in San Francisco, our education affairs correspondent, has something in here for you. And Bruce Enberg, Prairie 2, economic affairs correspondent. Let's start with him. He sent me an email after I said the commodity markets drove the farmers out. He says it wasn't commodity markets that drove farmers out. Since, like credit derivatives, the commodity market does almost no trading in anything tangible. Farm prices go up and down and simply serve the same purpose as a roulette wheel. Farmers were put out of business by market price rigging by a conspiracy of a handful of giant agribusiness corporations. They kept prices lower than the cost of production to free up land for their purchase, reversing land reform from the New Deal. Farmers that have avoided debt have survived, more or less. The Amish are still around. Point taken. Thank God we have the advisors to this program. We would never say anything that made sense. So Prairie 2 writes in about the 1% solution. Are you ready? Okay, here it is. The top 30 Wall Street banks have awarded themselves $145 billion in bonuses, and that amount comprises 1% of the U.S. gross domestic product. This is not corporate earnings. It's just executive bonuses. The U.S. gross domestic product counts everything from the money your babysitter makes to the sales of F-16s to Saudi Arabia. And GDP is only as big as it is because it multiplies as the money moves through the economy. The babysitter spends the money and it gets counted again and so on. The money spent on an F-16 for the Saudi Royal Air Force stops circulating when it leaves on the boat for the future site of Armageddon. The top tier of bankers and traders who got most of that 1% of our entire economy is a group so small that it wouldn't give you a good crowd in a basketball arena. They could, however, afford to buy the NBA outright with what for them would be pocket change and have them play just for their amusement. So President Obama is going to make cuts to the budget in a vain attempt to pander to the 3 million profoundly uninformed people who watch Fox News. These people make up 1% of the population, and Democrats don't understand why they lose elections when they appeal to them and ignore the other 99%. To be fair to the president, he did say all through the campaign that he intended to cut spending to balance the budget. It was the media that hammered the notion into us that he was a tax and spend liberal. So far, he has cut taxes and will now cut spending at a time when the Main Street economy desperately needs an influx of cash. Republicans will rightly point out that Obama's spending cuts amount to less than 1%. That number keeps popping up. Of the long-term deficit and will come right out of the middle class. Who needs national parks or food safety or air traffic control? Nothing that benefits the rich will be affected. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts, not even 1%. Billionaires who were taxed at 74% will continue to be taxed at 15%. Obama has not and will not do anything about the trade deficit, which represents money that stops building the economy the moment that the money leaves for China. The Chinese are able to circulate our money through the rest of the world, buying up resources and building a trading network for their exports. Notice their growth balloons as we decline. The money doesn't come back here since we export nothing but raw materials that cost a fraction of what we import. The trade deficit would be even worse, but they are strip mining our resources to export. China doesn't allow the export of essential metals from their country, so that foreign companies have no choice but to manufacture high-value goods like electronics and green technologies such as high-efficiency motors, batteries, and solar cells right in China. Putting the U.S. dollar into the world markets allows the bankers to do proprietary trading worldwide, but that doesn't bring any money back here either. That's what Swiss banks are for. But it works just fine for the Wall Street bankers who are 1% of 1% of the population and take 1% of the economy for themselves, destroying the wealth of the other 99% in the process. Republicans don't think the rest of us should even count on eating, let alone expect to have any wealth. Prairie 2. Check him out at his website, prairienumeral2.com. Thanks, Bruce. And tomorrow night, President Obama is going to tell the American public, well, nutrition, nutrition, state parks, federal parks, I mean, federal schmarks, air traffic control, bat squeeze. Tighten your belts, America! You know what's going to be interesting tomorrow night is to watch Democrats boo him. Out of respect to the titular head of their party, though they will probably sit there quietly. But remember, in the first address he gave to a joint session of Congress, it was not State of the Union. He'd only been president for, what, a month? If that. Of course, he should have. He should have said, ladies and gentlemen, tonight the State of the Union is on life support, thanks to the past 8 years of the Bush crime family and the 8 years prior to that of the Clinton administration. It's on life support. Oh, and the 4 years before that and the 8 years before that, all the way back to 1980 and Ronald Reagan, yada, yada, yada. But that would be expecting Barack Obama to be honest. And apparently, once one steps into the national political arena, one becomes incapable of being honest. Of course, that's the fault of us. We don't want honesty. We want denial. And then once we find that denial doesn't work anymore, then we switch to anger. And then we get into bargaining. And then depression. And then acceptance. And the Republicans know this. The American fascists understand this. We're getting close to acceptance. Getting close. We will never take to the streets. as they do in other countries, when the population of other countries understand just how deep and severe the cut is, we won't do that because we have been told not to. That's what we learned in Sunday school. Don't do it. Behave yourself. God wants you to be an idiot. God wants you. Look at, why did the Catholic Church develop something called liberation theology in Central and South America? Because some of the priests got tired of hearing Rome and the establishment say, it's okay, have babies, die, be sick, poor, and stricken with all kinds of terrible stuff. And when you die, Mother Mary will welcome you and everything will be fine. And a few priests looked at that after a while, after, 400 years, and said, wait a minute. let's try something different. And what happened to those priests? Well, the ones that weren't assassinated were excommunicated. This is where religion will screw your mind right into the ground, among other ways it'll, do that. But that's what religion teaches you, to shut up. The rapacious bastards who own your soul are going to continue to slice off pieces of it to satisfy their hunger. But don't worry, just accept Jesus or bless Moses or pray to Allah or sit and chant, read the Bhagavad Gita, just be quiet, everything's fine. Really? Is everything fine? I don't know, for some reason I'm kind of missing that part of it.
Had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 21 past the hour. I have on hand a report card from our education affairs correspondent, but she also sent me an email early this evening, and I'm going to do this one first, and then we may get to Kay's report tomorrow or later tonight. Kay writes, "Hi, Mike, just a quick note from the trenches today to illustrate your point that the media's sole purpose is to make us forget. This semester, I'm teaching advanced placement U.S. government. With this accelerated curriculum, it can be difficult to cover current events. There are so many nuts and bolts to learn that often the day's news falls by the wayside. Last week, however, I felt compelled to dedicate part of the class to the subject of the Supreme Court's outrageous decision giving corporations the same rights as persons. I began by asking students what had been featured in the news over the past few days. Answers included California's budget woes, the anniversary of the president's first year in office, and the Prop 8 trial. Pretty impressive, huh? I mean, right there, you can tell that these kids are in tune with current events. So why is it that not one student was aware that the Supreme Court had reached this horrific decision? When I have a class of 30 students who have chosen to take a very rigorous course in American government, as opposed to the regular version of the class, and not one of them is aware of a story as serious as this, there is no way I can blame it on the students. These young people are aware. They are curious. They are motivated. It is our media that consistently fail them and us. I've been stunned by the lack of knowledge of current events among young people in the past, but in those cases, I could attribute it, at least some of it, to lack of interest in the subject. This time, however, there's no question in my mind that the corporate media are solely responsible for keeping my students and the American public insulated from and ignorant of what really matters. They certainly do an excellent job of making us forget. Okay. And as you know, Kay's a school teacher on the high school level in San Francisco, educational affairs correspondent. Rahm Emanuel thinks liberals are effing retarded. Jane Hampshire, writing at FireDogLate.com, is quoting the Wall Street Journal's Peter Walston, recently arrived from the L.A. Times, who got into an event where Rahm Emanuel was spouting off about those effing liberals. We are effing retarded. We are effing stupid. The quote from the Wall Street Journal's Peter Walston, quote, the fiction was laid bare in August when Mr. Emanuel showed up at a weekly strategy session featuring liberal groups and White House aides. Some attendees said they were planning to air ads attacking conservative Democrats who were balking at Mr. Obama's health care overhaul. Effing retard, Mr. Emanuel scolded the group. According to several participants, he wanted them not to alienate the lawmakers whose votes would be needed on health care and other top legislative items. Yesterday, a journalist asked me, oh, that's the end of the quote. Jane writes, yesterday a journalist asked me if I thought Rahm was a tough guy because he's hearing many people say that he's actually shallow and weak. I pointed him to this famous story. The definitive Rahm Emanuel story takes place in Little Rock, Arkansas, in the heady days after Bill Clinton was first elected president. It was there that Emanuel, then Clinton's chief fundraiser, repaired with George Stephanopoulos, Mandy Grunwald, and other aides to a place called Doe's, which was the campaign hangout. Revenge was heavy in the air as the group discussed the enemies, Democrats, Republicans, members of the press, who wronged them during the 1992 campaign. Clifford Jackson, the ex-friend of the president and peddler of the Clinton draft-dodging stories, was high on the list. So was William Donald Schaefer, then the governor of Maryland and a Democrat who endorsed George Bush. Nathan Landau, the fundraiser who backed the candidacy of Paul Tsongas. He made it, too. Suddenly, Emanuel grabbed his steak knife. And as those who were there remember it, he shouted out the name of another enemy, lifted the knife, and brought it down full force into the table. Dead! He screamed. That's not tough. That's not tough. Tough is knowing you're going to take massive caca for standing up to powerful interests and then doing it anyway because it's the right thing to do, Jane writes. That's what Obama told people he would do when he was running for president. You're not a tough guy if your first thought upon assuming the power of the presidency is to use it to punish your enemies. You're a cowardly, petty, small-minded thug. Jane Hampshire, writing at FireDogLake.com. And, of course, as usual, Jane Hampshire is absolutely right. So the closest advisor to Barack Obama is his old Chicago buddy and punk, Rahm Emanuel. And tomorrow night, Barack Obama will display the influence of Rahm Emanuel when he tells America, well, we're going to continue slugging money to the military-industrial complex and to Homeland Security and to Wall Street and to the bankers and to the people who have absolutely destroyed this economy. But to you folks, I'm sorry, we have to belt tighten.
It's Mike Malloy.
So I can 25 before the hour. What else we have here? I know. Do we have, do you have a moment with Bob music around someplace? Is it, close at hand? I think we should have a moment with Bob. Once again, it is time for A Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Tonight's topic, Obama as ombudsman. Hey, Mike. This is one of those remember the 60s flashbacks. It's not necessarily a 60s thing, as it had happened many times before during the union movement struggle dating back to the turn of the century and the African-American civil rights movement since 1955. But I didn't see it with my own eyes until the late 60s. Here's the scene. Everything is about to boil over. The media talk about widespread unrest in the inner city, college campuses, and in the workplace. The fuse is lit, and everybody knows it's just a matter of time before something happens. City, state, and federal officials, as well as college administrators, want to avoid another race riot or massive anti-war demonstration, so they put forth an ombudsman to work with the people. Way back then, I had never come across the word before, so I had to look it up. Ombudsman. One, a government official who hears and investigates complaints by private citizens against other officials or government agencies. Two, a person who investigates and attempts to resolve complaints and problems as between employees and an employer, between students and a university. They always look something like this. Short sleeve, white shirt, skinny tie, a crew cut that had barely grown out enough so he could part his hair. The cartoon equivalent of a white middle-class straight guy whose job it was to find a way to work with a bunch of pissed off people. After many tumultuous meetings where nothing but compromises were made over and over again, the ombudsman would go back to management with a list of watered-down demands that barely hinted at what was needed. Following a meeting with the powers that be, the go-between ombudsman would return with a pronouncement. He'd say something like, "After lengthy deliberations with management, we've decided to relax the dress code and institute Hawaiian Shirt Fridays." So much for working within the system. Most of the time, the powers that be did something that eloquently demonstrated exactly what little regard they held for the wants and needs of the people. Like on November 27th, 1965, when some 40,000 protesters, led by several student activist groups, surrounded the White House calling for an end to the war and then marched to the Washington Monument. That same day, President Johnson announced the escalation from 120,000 to nearly 500,000 U.S. troops in Indochina. Cut to November 2006, when the Republicans lost the Senate and House in the midterm elections. The Democrats won because people wanted an end to the war in Iraq and were fed up with the Republican culture of corruption. In January 2007, Bush's response was to announce a surge of more troops to Iraq. Progressive change didn't happen when labor or civil rights organizers worked within the system. Change happens when rules are broken. When management says, "Screw you," we don't change a goddamn thing by staying politely out of sight with a prearranged free speech zone. The powers that be didn't give American workers an 8-hour workday or African Americans the right to vote because people sent angry email. Americans went on strike and won. What I saw 40 years ago and finally completely understand today is that the ombudsman works for management. That's where his checks come from. During his first faux State of the Union address, President Obama is going to ask Congress to freeze spending for some domestic programs, saying it will save taxpayers $250 billion over the next 10 years, but at whose expense? The Department of Health and Human Services is the United States government's principal agency for protecting the health of all Americans and providing essential human services, especially for those who are least able to help themselves. If Obama's budget is passed, spending for the Department of Health and Human Services will be frozen until 2013. The Pentagon and Homeland Security Department will be exempt from those proposed freezes. As Paul Krugman writes in today's New York Times, quote, it's a betrayal of everything Obama supporters thought they were working for. Just like that, Obama has embraced and validated the Republican worldview, and more specifically, he has embraced the policy ideas of the man he defeated in 2008, end quote. We worked diligently and gave the Democrats victory in the 2006 midterms. We worked our asses off again in 2008 and gave the Democrats increased majorities in both houses of Congress and the presidency. And they have returned after meeting with their corporate handlers to tell us that they're going to relax the dress code, institute Hawaiian shirt Fridays, and completely ignore the needs of the people. What do we expect? The ombudsman works for management. That's where the checks come from. As Jonathan Zasloff wrote today, quote, if this is true, Obama's proposed spending freeze, then there seems little reason to support Obama on anything. What next? The rotting corpse of Andrew Mellon as Treasury Secretary? Or do we already have that? End quote. And Krugman adds, quote, Mellon was Herbert Hoover's Treasury Secretary, who, according to Hoover, told him to liquidate the workers, liquidate the farmers, purge the rottenness. We know where they stand. We need to leave the free speech zones and take back our streets, our cities, our schools, our courts, our country. E.J. Dionne, Jr. writes in today's New Republic, quote, hoist your pitchforks. Time for angry Americans to march on the Supreme Court. The only proper response to this distortion of our political system by ideologically driven justices is a popular revolt. It would be a revolt of a sort deeply rooted in the American political tradition. The most vibrant reform alliances in our history have involved coalitions between populists, who stand up for the interests and values of average citizens, and progressives, who fight against corruption in government, and for institutional changes to improve the workings of our democracy. It's time for a new populist-progressive alliance, end quote. Regards, Bob. Another moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. If you would like copies of these, I think Bob has them posted at his website, which is, as you know, superbeans.com. Superbeans.com. All right, what else we got tonight? I just need to get this in. I'm so sorry. You may not want to hear this. Chinese legal experts are proposing a ban on eating dogs and cats in a move to end a culinary tradition dating back thousands of years. These recommendations are going to be submitted to higher authorities in April in China as part of a draft bill to tackle animal abuse. You see, in ancient times, dog meat was considered a medicinal tonic. Today, it is commonly available throughout China, but particularly in the north, where dog stew is popular for its supposed warming qualities. In recent years, however, such traditions are increasingly criticized by an affluent, pet-loving, urban middle class. Online petitions against dog and cat consumption have attracted tens of thousands of signatures, and you think all the news is so deadly serious. But the drafters of the new proposal want far more drastic measures, which would oblige law enforcement authorities to close down thousands of dog restaurants and butchers which supply the meat. Anyone who breaks the law would get 15 days in prison. Chang Jiwen, a law professor at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences who heads the drafting team, said, quote, "We are proposing that all dog and cat eating should be banned because it is causing many social problems," end quote. The plan for a dog meat ban has stirred up fierce debate between animal welfare groups in China and defenders of traditional China values. Zheng Li, the founder of the Lucky Cats Shelter in Beijing, said, quote, "I support this proposal. Whether you judge this as a good question of food security or emotions, there's absolutely no necessity in China for people to eat dogs and cats. We need something more than moral pressure. Beijing's dog restaurants get their meat mainly from vagrant and stolen dogs. In the suburbs, dogs are hung and slaughtered in front of buyers," end quote. Online critics said it was hypocritical to protect only dogs and cats and that the government should focus on human welfare before protecting animals. A poster going by the name Mummy on the Xinhua news agency website said, quote, "This is absurd. Why only dogs and cats? How about pigs, cows, and sheep?"
Nice guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. During the break coming up here, we're going to liberate the line so you can call in if you like. You know the number, 877-99-MALLOY or 877-996-2556. 877-996-2556 if you want to join in the fun and frivolity. I'm still dealing with, although I'm desperately trying to use denial here, I'm still dealing with the single disastrous 5-4 ruling that the Supreme Court issued the other day that has pushed the whole country back to the robber baron era of the 19th century. That's how the editorial in the New York Times back on the 22nd described it. Jim Hightower, from his news and commentaries from, actually it'll be, it's dated on Thursday, I think. Yeah, Sheila sent this to me. And he very simply says, remember their names, Alito, Kennedy, Roberts, Scalia, and Thomas. From within the dark isolation of the Supreme Court, these five men have pulled off a black-robed coup against the American people's democratic authority. In an unprecedented perversion of judicial power, the Alito, Kennedy, Roberts, Scalia, Thomas cabal has decreed that corporations have a free speech right to dip into their corporate coffers and spend unlimited sums of money to elect or defeat candidates of their choosing. Corporate interests already had way too much power, money power, over our political system, using their PACs, their executive bundling, their 527s, their front groups, and other financing gimmicks. Their chosen candidates have long had a big advantage over lesser-funded aspirants. No other group in America comes anywhere near the spending clout that this relatively small clutch of wealthy special interests wields over our elections and governments. So it's ludicrous for anyone, much less Supreme Court judges, to argue that the corporate voice is a victim of political censorship. That's the word chosen by Justice Kennedy to rationalize his vote for corporate plutocracy. Nonetheless, on their own whim, the five Supremes have now made corporations supreme in our land of the free, abruptly and autocratically reversing nearly 250 years of broad public agreement that corporate interests must be subjugated to the people's interests. This is not merely judicial activism, it is judicial radicalism. In the early years of our Democratic Republic, Thomas Jefferson warned about the dangerous rise of corporate power, declaring that Americans must, quote, crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, end quote. Today, I'm sure that founding patriots like Jefferson are not simply spinning in their graves at the Supreme Court's surrender to this aristocracy. They're trying to claw their way out of their graves to throttle all five of the traitors. Yeah, I would think so. I just cannot process that ruling because it has not taken effect yet. As corrupt as corporate money has made the system to begin with, now, these rat bastards no longer have to hide behind the bundling and the political action committees and all these other lies and distortions that Hightower mentions. Now they can just go ahead, turn the key, open the door, let the loot roll out, loot that most of these corporate thugs have stolen from us because they do not play by the rules. It doesn't make any difference what laws are on the books regarding pollution of the environment, tax cheats, hiding corporate profits, lying, stealing, tricking. We're too big to fail. Bail us out! That wasn't enough. I'll be damned. That wasn't enough. So we haven't seen the full frontal assault that is coming in this election cycle. When do you suppose it'll begin? Spring? Summer? Watch what happens. Watch what happens. Here's the interesting part. You and I will have a front seat to watch the death of this republic. And you know what else? There's not a damn thing we can do about it. You know, you come on the scene of a car wreck on the freeway, this doesn't apply to Republicans. If you're a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive, you will stop to help. Republicans just hit the accelerator and keep going, conservatives. But you'll stop to help. Who's going to stop to help us? There's nothing we can do except be like a Republican and drive right on past this train wreck that the Supreme Court has delivered to us. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, my God, listen to all the naysaying, all this negativity on the part of these damn liberals, the five that are left on the air. Listen to this. Listen to this crap. Oh, and that Krugman and Michael Moore and who else? Oh, yeah, Al Franken. Oh, my God. And the people saying that are the ones that are going to be most deeply crushed. Because the corporatocracy knows who we are. They know that we're the enemy. It's these little right-wing drones, these little lemmings, these little conservatives that insisted to their senators, insisted to the Democrats, insisted to the political system. No, confirm Sammy the Fish Alito. No, confirm John Roberts. It was the Democrats, you see, who could have stopped this. And they didn't. The Senate Democrats. Oh, well, we're going to save our veto power for something important. Oh, well, we're not going to impeach the president. That's in the past. We want to look forward. You rat bastards, every one of you. Well, here's your payoff. Now, it won't affect the Democratic Party leadership. Not that much. It may require a shuffling of the Democratic Party leadership, but there will always be Democratic Party leadership, and it will always be almost, not quite, almost as corrupt as Republican Party leadership. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for hanging out. You still here? Oh, my God. All right. If that's the way you want to play, then that's the way we'll play. Let's go to the phones. Frank Frank is in Detroit listening on Sirius. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Mike. Listen, I was sickened by the whole situation, too, with this corporate personhood thing. And I guess the main question I wanted is, what are your thoughts on a constitutional amendment to destroy corporate personhood? I have no illusions that it's, you know, going to be easy, but I mean, I know that's the only thing that is going to get rid of these people out of our lives and put them in the place where they are. I mean, personally, I think corporations should be chartered and be reviewed every 35 or 50 years or whatever. And if they're on track, stay alive. If you're not, then die. But, you know, to equate free speech with money and say corporations have the same rights as people, this is just perverse and disgusting, and or maybe even impeachment of those justices. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, pretty hopeless at this point, Frank. I'll tell you why. In the first place, the people that would have to start impeachment are the people on the House Judiciary Committee, and those are Democrats who control that. If they would not impeach two bona fide United States war criminals, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, if they wouldn't even begin an inquiry into the crimes committed by those two monsters, they're damn sure not going to mess around with Supreme Court justices. So the idea of impeaching them is completely off the table. It's not even in the room. It's not even in the House. I mean, it's gone. Now, as far as legislation, a constitutional amendment, The very people who benefit from corporate money, that is, our representatives, would have to initiate a constitutional amendment, taking money out of their own pockets. You know, politicians are slime. They're filth. There are some people under the heading of politicians who are not that way. Dennis Kucinich is one. There's a handful of righteous Republican, or I'm sorry, oh God, righteous Democrats operating in this republic as office holders. They're few and far between. As far as I'm concerned, there's not a single member of the Republican Party who is worth the powder to blow him to hell serving in the House or the Senate. So it's not going to happen. Now, since the Supreme Court has ruled, it is impossible for the House or the Senate to pass any legislation at all that tampers with the Supreme Court ruling, because the only issue the Supreme Court is supposed to rule on is a constitutional issue. Does it violate the Constitution to deny corporations personhood? According to this right-wing Supreme Court, it does. So they ruled as they ruled. Now, the only way this might be turned around is if one or two of these right-wingers, and they're all young, die. If they die, and if there is a Democratic president, one would hope that he or she would replace the dead right-wing Supreme Court justices with people who are sane. But you have to keep in mind where we are. We're at a turning point in this republic. There have been several major turning points. This is one. What we are turning into, if not already there, is a legally, constitutionally sanctioned corporate state. We are no longer a democratic republic. That was murdered it was mortally wounded on December 12th, 2000, and finished off on January 21st, 2010. It took them a little over 10 years to complete the murder, but it's done. We no longer live. I don't know what to say, Frank, and thanks for calling, man. I don't know what to say to offer any kind of an opinion other than what is on the table in front of us. It's right there. I mean, this is not a matter of my opinion. This is a matter of this is where we are. We are how our teachers, you know, I need to ask Kay Petrini out in San Francisco. How are you? How is any teacher of American history and government going to teach his or her students that how laws are passed, how people are elected to the House or the Senate, how presidential candidates are selected? How are they going to do that? Because the system that I was taught in school, that you were taught, even though it was not completely true, it was certainly more true than what we are facing now. So if our teachers are going to teach the truth, then they are going to have to tell students, starting when? Next semester, I guess? The way people are elected to office in the House of the Senate of the Presidency in this country is A, they are not elected. They are selected. And then the people are given the fun little enterprise of believing that they're making a choice after their brains have been scrubbed thoroughly by millions of dollars poured into campaigns, into advertising, to convince you that the guy or the woman you thought you really wanted to vote for is really a child molesting, homosexual, communist, probably from Kenya, who used to eat white babies while he or she was having sex with a same-sex partner. That's what's going to happen. And as a result of that, having that pounded into your head by corporate dollars, you're not going to vote for the person you thought you wanted to vote for. Oh, God, I'm not voting for a cannibalistic queer. Are you out of your mind? Jeez, thanks for telling me, GE. I was almost voted for him. I don't know what to tell you. As I've said before, there's no answers on this program. I'm not omniscient. I'm not the pig man. I'm not Rush Limbaugh. I'm not the parrot boy, Hannity. I'm not the suicider, Glenn Beck. I'm not the voice of the people, Ed Schultz. I am just somebody who sits on this program at night and tries to figure out which way's up. Kind of like you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know what I'm saying. This ruling by the United States Supreme Court ends even the pretend representative democracy that we had. You do get that, everybody, right? You do understand that. I'm not talking to the caller from Detroit. I'm just saying, you do get that. You do. Okay. So. Dave is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Mike. Nice to see you at the party there Saturday night.
Were you there?
I was there.
Were you out there on the dance floor?
I was.
Man, we had some fun, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, that was it. That was a great event. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. That was the best one we've ever had.
Really?
By far.
Oh, man, that's great. That's great.
Yeah. Anyway, your first hour, you were talking about the Supreme Court as you are now. And
yeah.
I was thinking, you know, these corporations are now persons. Maybe we should just tax them at the personal income tax rate. Do away with the corporate income tax.
Oh, no. Can't do that. These are special persons.
Oh, is that right?
They're like,
you know, they got to draw the line someplace. Either they're persons or they're not.
Yeah, well, you know, corporations, when the smoke clears, the average corporate income tax is supposed to be around 15%, but they never pay that. Do you know that over the past 6 or 7 years, you and I, individually, on our income tax returns, probably paid more than about 80% of corporations in this country. I mean actual cash. Paid more. Because corporations, you see, they create jobs. They create wealth. My goodness, if we punish the corporations by making them pay their fair share, why, next thing you know, all the jobs would be sent to China or someplace.
Well,
hold on a second.
They are already, aren't they?
Dave, hold on a minute. I got to take a break. We'll come back and finish up as soon as we're finished. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Really?
So much money.
the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. 21 past the hour. Uh-oh, news alert, news alert, news alert. This is a something that just crossed from the Washington Post. President Obama will propose a major increase in funding for elementary and secondary education for the coming year in Wednesday's State of the Union address, one of the few areas to grow in an otherwise austere federal budget, officials said Tuesday night. Okay, there you have it. We'll see, won't we? Huh? What happened? Did somebody explain to Mr. Obama that cutting federal spending for education is not necessarily a good thing to do, although that's exactly what corporate America wants? Back to Dave in Minneapolis. Thanks for holding on. Where were we?
Oh, we were talking about corporations paying personal income tax.
Oh, yeah. No, that'll never happen. They're persons, but they're persons of privilege. They're they're like I hate to bring race into it, Dave, but they're like white folks 70, 80 years ago, you know. We were all supposed to be equal, but everybody knew that wasn't the case. So that's what corporations are doing now. They're supposed to be equal to us humans, but some people are more equal than some people are more equal than others, right?
That's it, exactly.
There you go.
I was hoping on that education thing that with that funding cut that maybe we wouldn't be able to buy those revised textbooks from Texas.
I was thinking the same thing. If Obama's going to increase federal spending for education, well, there you go. Texas, I don't know why. I guess because they have so many students. They usually determine what national textbook textbook publishers are going to have in there. And I understand that this go-around, they want to get rid of all these crappy-ass social heroes like, oh, I don't know, Martin Luther King Jr., Cesar Chavez, people like that. Replace them with good corporate capitalists who will explain to the little boogers in school that, you know, bleeding heart liberal is not the way to go. You know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. If you're a different color and you don't like it in this country, well, then go scrub the color off and be white. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I hope you have a pair of boots.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, got a boogie. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
All right, take care. Appreciate you checking in. Ah, yes. Let's buy lots of textbooks that explain that evolution is just a theory. And there's another one equally valid, creationism. Okay. So maybe dinosaurs did change into birds, but you know how that happened? God did it. Yeah. Oh, my God. Paul is in Lakeville, Maine?
Phil.
Oh, I mean Phil. Lakeville, Maine? Is that where you are, Phil?
Yes, Mike. I'm up here on vacation, and it's the first time I've ever listened to you. Actually, second time.
Oh, yeah? And you're just pulling your hair out, saying, how did this guy get on the air, right?
No. I'm glad to hear somebody like you rather than the other idiots that you listen to that are just, you know, all the way on the other side.
Yeah.
But anyways, the reason I'm calling is about the Supreme Court decision in corporations. I'm not an attorney by any stretch of the imagination, but I was just wondering if by the Supreme Court declaring the corporation, look, this is an individual. From a legal point of view, does that open up the board of directors to more,
It doesn't.
It's viable to get sued and arrested for things?
No, it doesn't open corporations up to.
It sets them apart and makes it easier to get at them and pierce the corporate veil.
No.
Look at this. That's all.
Yeah, Phil, it doesn't do anything to make corporations more vulnerable or more liable to the laws of the land. It does nothing about responsibility and has everything to do with privilege. That's all. Corporate America, just like Republicans, they have no interest in responsibility. None whatsoever. You start at the very top of this muddy heap of slime balls that are Republicans. Start up there at the top with, Palin and Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of these, these Republicans, they're not about responsibility. They're not about community. What they're about is, you know, kiss my butt. If you don't like what I'm doing, get out of the way. I'm going to pull myself up by my bootstraps. I'm going to make a lot of money. Get out the way with your damn regulations. Yeah, look, you got to understand something. The Supreme Court ruling was that corporations have the same rights as human beings where it concerns First Amendment. In that regard, they seem to have declared that corporations are human. That's not the case because, you know, in the first place, corporations never die. They're just eaten by other corporations and digested, and they become part of a new corporation, that's all. So while the illusion is that corporations have the same rights as humans, no, only the right to further corrupt and pollute the system. That's the right they have.
This is a
He watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malone.
26 before the hour. Now, you know, if you're a regular listener to this program, you know, I've been saying for weeks, if not months, that I do not support the policies of Barack Obama, that he's been an absolute disappointment to me. And yet, I've got a dummy on the phone. Watch this. Eric. Okay, thanks a lot, Eric. Goodbye. Have a nice drive. Eric was calling from Donner's Pass. Be careful where you have supper tonight, Eric. I don't even know what the hell he's trying to say. You know, Kathy, when Kathy answered the call, she said, well, for the record, Mike doesn't support Obama's policies. And this goofball decided he still wanted to go on the air. Go away. Go away. If you're going to be that stupid, don't call my program. Okay, thank you. Lou is in Toronto, Ontario, listening on Sirius. Hey, Lou.
Hey, how are you? I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
From north of on the north side of the border, anyway.
Yeah, well, you're on the safe side for now.
Well, you know what? Like, I mean, with our friends, et cetera, we were talking about this Supreme Court. We're just like, I mean, shocked. It's corporatism all the way now in the United States. I guess really the only answer is if the parties have any sense, because they think that this will even wipe them out.
Mm-hmm.
Is basically amending the, you have no other choice but amending the Constitution. Make it, because that's the only way around it. There's no other way around it.
Right, but it's not going to happen.
I know that, but you know what? I mean, I don't understand it. Is it not possible to change how financing is? This is what I wanted to compare it to. You know how what they did, we had the same problem up here north of the border.
Yeah.
And with the bid, the party said, you know what, this has got to stop. What we're going to do is that we're going to set up a system that every party is going to get money out of the Treasury for the election, depending on how many votes they got the last election.
Good luck with that.
And corporations and individuals, the maximum they can donate is $1,000. That's it.
You know, for some reason, I'm just getting a rush of deja vu. Been there, done that. I don't think it's going to work in north of the border any better than it works south of the border. The corporations don't respect borders.
Oh, yeah, no, but I'm just trying to say, in terms of controlling the influence that these corporations have in terms of the meddling into the elections, right, and then trying to influence the elections, they basically up here, corporations have no impact on politicians anymore because they don't need them for the money to finance their campaign funds. What would happen if they would bring that kind of a system where the parties actually get, I know it's anathema to Americans, but actually get the government to finance the party's elections.
We tried that here. It was called.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it was called public financing. There used to be a place on our tax returns, Lou, where we could check a box. It may still be there. I don't know. I have no idea. We could check a box. We want a buck or $2 to go from our refund, or a buck or $2 to be included in the check we were sending to pay our income tax, to go to public financing of political campaigns. That doesn't work in a corporatocracy. First of all, the American public always sees the government as them over there, not us. There's no sense of connection. It's amazing. There are 435 elected members of the U.S. House of Representatives. They come from 435 congressional districts. Every person in the United States in each one of those districts thinks that his or her representative is fine. It's the other 434 who are insane. As a result, unless there is a shift in the demographics of those districts, the same Republican or the same Democrat will be sent back year after year to further the destruction. This is how it's always worked in this country. As far as senators are concerned, same thing. We have 100 senators, and every one of them, except the ones from my state, are crazy. Therefore, every 6 years, I send my senators back. It's the other 98 or 99 that are mad and crazy and drooling idiots who like to eat squirming babies. It's not mine. It's the rest of them. That's how crazy we are in the United States. Now, as far as your system, you have a parliamentary system. Your whole damn government can come down if the people decide, whoops, okay, no, didn't like that last proposal, Mr. Prime Minister. I realize there are some little intricacies there that have to be honored. But you have a parliamentary system. We do not. We don't vote for parties here. We vote for individuals, or at least that's the way it's supposed to be. But it ain't that way anymore, Lou. We're going to be voting for corporations. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Oh, and good luck with that, preventing corporations from having an influence on your elections. Boy, I just can't stop Prairie 2 from emailing in tonight. Here's another one here. The corporate state, he writes, don't expect massive new ad spending except in districts where some poor bastard tries to stand up to them. And then only if he is influencing the rest. In fact, spending will probably drop drastically once the new, quote, government, end quote, takes control. Republican hacks are expecting a big payday will be disappointed. The brown shirts are always the first to go. Look for massive new corporate regulations that will eliminate the last of small and medium companies. Homeland Security isn't being cut. So look for new anti-terror regulations. This will also apply to food safety. So no growing your own anymore. Okay, well, that's a good point. You know, most of us are out here fixated on how much money is going to be used to corrupt and pollute and destroy the system. There are other ways of doing it. More covert. And I think Bruce is probably right. You know, why bother spending all this money when all you have to do is make sure you have the right key people in and then completely and utterly destroy the regulatory system? Don't forget, the regulatory system in this country, I don't care what the regulatory agency was, could be the Bureau of Mines, it could be the Food and Drug Administration, all those were set up as strictly a check on corporate activity. Why? Because corporations, surprise, surprise, are not rational. They're not moral. They're not human. So therefore, corporations will, and I realize what I'm doing here. I'm making it sound as if they are actual breathing beings. But corporations will, at the whim of their board of directors, none of whom are ultimately responsible, corporations will destroy, devour, murder everything in its path. Corporations, capitalism / corporations, are, is the biggest enemy of the American family, of any family on earth. They are anti-family, they're anti-life, they're anti-everything. Small businesses, small farms, entrepreneurship, that is what made the country great. How many times do we have to hear that most jobs most hires are conducted by small businesses? If that's the case, then why all this bowing down to corporate power? Well, very quick answer, because corporations, like Willie Sutton said when he was asked why does he rob banks, because that's where the money is. That's all. But as Bruce points out, if the corporations can get control of the regulatory system, which they almost completely had control of during the Bush years, right? Remember, the head of the, was it Agriculture Department or was it some other department, was a former lobbyist for the lead industry, for the lead industry. Oh, God. Well, Bruce may be right. There may not be a tidal wave of corporate money. There are other ways to do it. But if that tidal wave is needed to destroy a candidate who has the temerity to stand up and say, well, I think corporations should be responsible. Bang! They're gone that quickly. And I'm sure Bruce will agree with that. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina, listening on Sirius. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, man, what's up?
You are.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I heard a good one today on the CB radio. Some of these two bubbles were saying how fast Reggie Bush was from being a Super Bowl. I said, the guy said, how fast is he going to be? He said, about as fast as the Massachusetts Democrats going to the podium to see the election, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I cracked up on that one. Listen, Harry Reid is going to lose his job this year.
Who is?
Harry Reid. He's going to lose his job this year. He might well just, he said in the Senate, he might well just say, well, boys and girls, put away the books. We're going to start a new lesson here. We're not going to legislate anymore. We're going to investigate. We're going to go back. We're going to investigate everything to Bush. I mean, if you're going to lose your election, why don't you go ahead? Because they're going to burn his behind.
Yeah, because it's my understanding, once the president, vice president leaves office, you can still impeach him. You can still produce indictment, and then you turn it over to the civilian authorities and send the SOBs to prison for the rest of their life.
I would investigate until the Republicans scream, so they can't take it no more. They can't do anything about that. They can't come in and filibuster an investigation now, can they?
They can't. Arnold, I got to leave there tonight. I'm sorry, man. It's going to be a short call. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Come on. Before the hour, thanks to the crew tonight, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Kathy Bay, who's the executive producer. Steve at Green 960 in San Francisco writes, hey, Mike, isn't it cool that Obama wants to freeze the wallet now that he gave Wall Street all of our money? Now Main Street, you know, the ones who need the money, are left in the cold. Who would have thought that the man that inspired me to tears would throw the people under the bus so quickly? I hear you. And Tom writes, the Democratic Party only pretends to care for working people. They could have gone for the nuclear option and done away with the filibuster, thus passing lots of progressive legislation such as health care, single payer, but they intentionally did not because they are traitors. The Democrats are a complete fraud like the Republicans. Tom in Minneapolis. Yeah, Democratic Party leadership certainly is. and the rank and file members of the House and the Senate, with a few exceptions. Yeah, there still are a few exceptions. There really are. Pretty disappointing, huh? Steve is in Austin, Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. All things considered.
Well, good.
First of all, I think Prairie 2 is a bit of an optimist.
You think?
And that Bob is kind of Pollyannish. It's bad out here, man. It's bad.
Wait, no, wait. Bob who?
Bob Alexander.
He's Pollyanna-ish?
Yeah. I'm being somewhat facetious. I think they exemplify exactly what's going on, except it's even worse.
Well, I I've kind of gotten to know both these guys, and
no disrespect.
Trust me, Bob Alexander is not Pollyanna-ish. If anything, he's deeper into dark despair than I am. No, he's not.
I'm with him.
Okay,
with him.
All right. Just wanted to clear that up. As far as Prairie 2 goes.
I'm looking at expiration dates on my canned goods and planning on how to buy the next wave of canned goods that don't expire till 14 or 15.
Right. Well, I check mine every once in a while too. I try to take them in sequential order so that the ones that still have the 2011 expiration date are on the shelf a little bit longer than the ones with the 2010.
Right. Yeah. You're reaching to the back to
right.
find the one that's got the
exactly.
milk.
Exactly. Right now, I mean, I'm already using up the July 2010 mayonnaise jars. Because I don't want that. You know, to me, mayonnaise is one of the basic food groups, and I don't want any of that to go sour.
And just one thing about Texas, don't forget.
What's that?
Ann Richards, Molly Ivins,
right.
Jim Hightower, which is he's held in quite high esteem.
Oh, yeah.
God.
Now, see, Jim Hightower, when he was Secretary of Agriculture down there, he was a real populist. I mean, you know, a lot of these people claim to be a populist. Oh, hog snot. People like Glenn Beck are absolute nothing but corporate tools. They belong right behind the zipper of corporate America. That's where they belong. That's where they stay. But you have somebody like Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins. These were real populists. These were old-style populists, hell-raising, ass-kicking populists who said, look, you know, we can do better than this. Down with corporate America, up with the small farmer, up with entrepreneurship, up with the men and women who want to open small businesses and hire 20 people. And God knows I miss those people. I realize Hightower's still around, but man, do I miss Molly Ivins and Ann Richards. And Texas has produced some of the most astonishing progressives, kind of like Wisconsin. I mean, it's just amazing to me sometimes, you know?
It is. I'll let you go.
All right, Steve. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in. John got a minute here. John's in L.A. Hi, John.
Hey. How are you?
Pretty good.
I'm trying to figure out what the reasons would be, in addition to the obvious ones, why the White House lets out and releases parts of the State of the Union.
Well, I think it's tradition. I think they do it every time.
I've got a couple ideas why they might.
Okay.
Also, but not as obvious or allowed. The lessening of the shock is one possible benefit to the White House of letting out certain, more controversial things. Also gauging public response to its possible State of the Union, so that maybe last second changes could be made.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless of the reason, I think it's bogus to do. I don't think it's fair.
Right.
To the American people who've been suckered long enough. I think that the pre-release is tantamount. It may sound kind of screwy, does to some, but it's tantamount to insider trading of political information. and it's not obvious that it's insider trading, but it's all the pre-screening and pre-spinning and laundering of information that can go on.
Well, you know, I think you're probably absolutely right, John. I hate it too. I think it is product testing. Let's release a little bit of this and see how it plays. It's also because the United States now is run by two corporate parties and has been for some time, one of which is vile and vicious. The other one is stupid and irresponsible. They release the entire tax so the Republicans, or in reverse situation, Democrats, can get their response ready. You know, that kind of equal time nonsense. Hey, John, I got to leave you there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. We'll talk again. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.